You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Strobe Talbot, and it's my pleasure to welcome you here to the Brookings Institution on a soggy day. It's not too hard to come in from outside on a day like this. This is the fifth Growth Through Innovation Forum that we have held here at Brookings. I'll give you a little bit of the background in a minute. It's the third one that we are conducting publicly. The phrase growth through innovation is an important part of the vocabulary here at Brookings. We have what we call four institutional priorities under which we try to cluster all of the work that our more than 100 scholars do here. Those four priorities are energy and climate, opportunity and well-being, managing global change, and growth through innovation. This is, I think, exactly the right moment to be having today's event. We are in a period of transition in our national leadership here in the Capitol, of course. We have new Treasury Secretary, new Chief of Staff coming in. We'll be having a new Commerce Secretary, Labor Secretary, and, of course, the 113th Congress is settling in on Capitol Hill. The forum is going to address the issues of how to reinvigorate our economy, how to strengthen competitiveness, and how to create jobs. We're going to have three panels. The first on advancing industry and manufacturing, the second on deficit reform, and the third on improving government performance. The participants here today include Brookings scholars, outside experts, and private sector representatives and leaders. Our discussions will reflect a lot of the research that goes on here at Brookings, and you will be able to find a number of examples of that research outside the Falk Auditorium where you came in. I recommend in particular the work of our Metropolitan Program on ideas on how to revitalize manufacturing and also the work of our Governance Studies Program on how to make an innovation-based economy. The Growth Through Innovation Project is an example of what we're doing increasingly here at Brookings, and that is undertaking both research and public events and outreach that draw from multiple programs or research programs here at the institution. And we have three of our research programs represented here today. The Growth Through Innovation Project is led inside of Brookings by Daryl West of our Governance Studies Program, Bruce Katz of our Metropolitan Program, and Martin Bailey of our Economic Studies Program. The co-chairs of GTI, as we call it, Growth Through Innovation, are three Brookings trustees, Glenn Hutchins, Klaus Kleinfeld, and Dominic Barton. And my final note before turning the program over to Glenn is to do something quite different than I did for many years, and it shows that there has been technological innovation, and we live in a new era. I used to always end my remarks by saying, will everybody please turn off their cell phones? I would ask you to turn them on to silent. You can keep them on the condition that you use them only to tweet out of this conference. And for those of you who are able to do that, I'm not yet one of them, the hashtag is hashtag U.S. Innovation. So, Glenn, you know all of that. So come on up here and talk to these folks.
I'm sure in an act of widespread civil disobedience, you're going to do with your technology what you choose. As someone in the technology business, please go ahead because I like to make money while I'm talking. I'd like to thank you, Strobe, for having me here today, welcoming all of us to the Brookings Growth and Innovation Forum, and welcome to all of you. We've got a stellar group of panels organized today with some fantastic panelists. I'll get through my remarks very quickly because I know you've come to hear them, not me. I did want to reflect that our first Growth Through Innovation panel was over 3 years ago, at a time we were really in the depths of the Great Recession. The unemployment rate was 10%. We'd lost 8.5 million jobs. It's worth pausing to remember that. A lot of us were it was a moment of great national crisis. Brookings, I think, under Strobe's great leadership, chose to point and lead the way toward the future. How do we solve, how do we grapple with then today's problems in order to create a brighter future? One of the things we did was what you're here to witness, to be a part of today, the Growth and Innovation Forum. We decided we would examine government policies that would help to unleash private sector innovation. We weren't under any illusions that government actually creates jobs or creates innovation, but can create the conditions under which those can be fostered. And the need, because we viewed the need for growth on the heels of the Great Recession as a vital American problem. A huge loss of economic production. We're operating at about $1 trillion below our potential. Unacceptably high unemployment rate, which represents a vast loss of human potential. Many people ask sort of why is growth so important? Why shouldn't we focus on more Washington-centric kind of problems? And it's really kind of a math problem. People don't understand the vital difference in, of the compounding of interest over the course of a very long time period in economic growth. 1% difference in economic growth, 2 to 3%, represents a massive, massive outcome difference over time. I just have a few examples for you. If, for instance, between the period from the end of the Civil War to 1990, the U.S. economy had grown 1 percentage point less, our economy would have been the same size in 1990 as that of Mexico. That 1% difference over that century created a massive outcome difference. Looking forward, 10 years from now, if we grow at 2% rather than a 3% potential, we will have had an additional $1 trillion loss of outcome, which is about $10,000 per household in this economy. That's a very, very big deal. But growth alone is also not important. It's also growth that is inclusive, that is broadly shared, and that's one of the things that Brookings is devoted to. We have a project called the Hamilton Project, which is focused centered on that issue. If over the course of the last 30 years, roughly 35 years, the average income in a nine states household had grown at the same rate of the U.S. economy, 0.6% actual versus for the household growth rate versus 2% for the economy, the per capita GDP would be 50% higher than it is today. It would be $90,000 versus $60,000. This is, if you translate that into kind of what happens at the household and American economy, that is vital. And what we do in Washington is really, really important. I just came back recently from a trip to Brazil. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. But Brazil is essentially, has gone to essentially 0% growth rate. A lot of that has to do with the kinds of things which we've experienced from Washington that has been imposed in Brazil on an economy that's less resilient than ours. Fiscal uncertainty, slightly higher taxes, slightly more regulation, slightly more cost of labor, and all that has caused the economy of Brazil to go from an economic miracle to essentially 0% growth rate. Now, we have an ability to withstand more of that in the United States than they do, but it's the same effect. Government can't necessarily create economic growth, but it can create the conditions under which an economy grows or create the burdens under which an economy struggles. And we need to understand that that's vitally important. So today, you look where we are, and you can see that the economy has been in recovery. Household net worth has recovered almost pre-recession levels. The economy is almost to pre-recession levels. We've added 4.5 million jobs. That still means we have four to go to get back to pre-recession levels. Unemployment rate has dropped to 7.8%, but it's not enough. Households have begun to restore their balance sheets. Housing sectors finally started to recover and contribute to economic growth. We're in the process of a slow, steady recovery. The problem is that at about 2%, it's probably not enough to reduce unemployment measurably from here, and getting above 2% is absolutely vital. That's what we're going to talk about today. And we're very, very hopeful that we can do that because we're creating the conditions right now to increase economic growth in the private sector. Today, however, the big problem is the political failure in this town associated with the inability to solve our government debt problems. Now, while our government debt is not a problem today, its trajectory leads us over the course of not that long time period, a decade, to levels that will further imperil our economic growth. If we get the levels of debt that's projected based on today's operating of the government, history shows that those countries that have experienced that level of debt grow another 1% less than they would have otherwise. So you can see, well, a way to think about it is we're on the cusp of having an economy that can contribute the above 2% growth necessary to generate reductions in unemployment, but we're also on the cusp of having a debt problem that can take that growth away and get us back to the sub 2% growth that will cause unemployment to be very sticky for a very long period of time. That is a very, very big problem. It's the problem that we need to, and that doesn't include the damage to consumer confidence, the decisions that are taken as a result of those uncertainties, corporate boardrooms with respect to employment and consumer and capital spending and all those sorts of things that layer on top of that. So that is a very, very big problem that we will next turn to focus on the resources of growth through innovation as we in coming years. But as we move to the panel today, one of the things that Bruce Katz, who's leading this next panel, has taught me is that while national governments can build up deficits and wallow in dysfunction, states and cities cannot. And that the hope in many, I think Brandeis said the states are laboratories of the nation, the hope that we have for important parts of our future is that people at the state and local level continue to soldier on and do what's necessary where the rubber meets their roads to create the conditions for economic growth, kind of innovation, and projects like advanced manufacturing that can generate the type of jobs that get those per capita median incomes up and generate the kind of growth which is shared and inclusive. So today we got a great panel managed by Bruce. He'll introduce the panelists. The title of the panel is Proven Strategies for Bolstering Advanced Industries. Bruce, it's all yours. Take it away.